Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
If you've been enjoying this podcast and want a super easy way to support it, you can simply find me on YouTube by searching Demon Creep. A subscription is a great help. But if you want to help the longevity of this podcast, my channel offers channel memberships for as low as 99 cents a month. Thank you, and keep enjoying the Demon Creep podcast. Hello, souls and demons, and welcome back to the portal. For today's allegedly true stories, I have 4 encounters that all happened on a highway. So sit back, grip your seats, put on your seatbelt, and enjoy. When you're getting followed by somebody at 3 a.m., you hope it's a cop. This happened a few years ago when I was bartending in college. I was coming home down a stretch of divided highway at around 3 a.m. when I noticed a car heading towards me in the wrong lane. I doubted myself at first and thought the car was on the other side of the highway. Sure enough, a white Ford sedan passed me at a really high speed, at least 90. It's worth noting for later that I also drive a white Ford sedan. I was used to drunk, idiot drivers in the middle of the night, so I pulled to the side of the road and let him pass me. I had a moment of clarity and thought to call the police, thinking this person could hurt themselves or somebody else. The dispatcher answered and, after telling them which road exit mile marker I was at, told me they would send a car. The state police station was only a few exits away, so I figured they would send somebody and I would just drive home. As I headed back onto the highway, I noticed some lights a few miles behind me. I live in a more rural part of southeastern PA, and traffic at 3 a.m. tends to be truckers and cops. The car gained on me as I was getting up to speed, so I stayed in the right lane and waited to be passed. Instead, they flipped on their high beams, making it uncomfortable to drive, and rode my tailgate. At this point, I was going to be pulled over by the police. I drove a white Ford sedan and had just called about a different white Ford sedan, so I grabbed my registration from the glove box. Suddenly, the car behind me audibly slammed on the brakes and stopped in the middle of the highway. They must have shut off their car because the lights went out and I saw what looked like the same Ford sedan from earlier. Still, I thought this may have been a police car. They had a roof rack, and it could have looked like I had reached for a gun in my glove box or something. I panicked and called 911 for the second time and asked the dispatcher if they had sent a cruiser to investigate. The dispatcher was a little curt with me and assured me they had sent somebody out. "Dispatcher, we have sent a troop out to find the car, sir. Me. I only ask because somebody is following me and acting weird. It could be a cop and I think I freaked them out by getting my registration." "Dispatcher, are you pulled over?" "Me. No, they didn't turn on their lights." "Dispatcher, let me try to get the trooper we sent out." As she was talking, the car again sped towards me and stopped inches from my bumper. Again, their high beams were on and again they slammed their brakes. I told the dispatcher, "I'm pretty sure this is not the police behind me." The car sped to my bumper again and turned their high beams on, this time laying on the horn. Hearing this, the dispatcher asked me what was happening. "Dispatcher, what's happening? Did you honk?" "Me. That's the car behind me. I don't think it's a cop." "Dispatcher, I'll try to get the trooper again, but I don't think that's him behind you." For some reason, this is what shook me. Before that, I was thinking I would get pulled over and maybe get a ticket. Up until then, I was going to the speed limit and trying to avoid getting pulled over. I told the dispatcher, I don't care if I get pulled over, I'm speeding, and if they put their lights on, then I'll pull over. I started to accelerate and the person behind me just kept up with me. The speed limit was 55 and they kept on my bumper the entire time, but this time they were swerving. I tried to signal for an exit then bail on it, but they followed. At the next exit, I took the off-ramp and continued on to the on-ramp, and the car behind me followed the whole time. I thought about trying to go to a Wawa convenience store / gas station that's pretty much the only populated place in southeastern PA at 3 a.m. But the dispatcher and I thought that would be unsafe. She was calm and talking to another person trying to send police to me. The other person, maybe a supervisor, asked if I could drive to the state police station, realizing that I was one exit away. I told her I was coming there and she said she would have troopers meet me outside. As I pulled off to the exit, the car followed me. I blew a few red lights trying to get to the police station and the car tried to pull into the other lane to pass me, or pull up alongside me. Once the police station was in view, I put on my turn signal and the car slammed on its brakes again, turned off their lights and turned into the parking lot. The story ends kind of anticlimactically as I pulled into the police station and met the troopers. Two of them went to find the car and I stayed with a third trooper. I thanked the dispatcher and her supervisor, and the state trooper escorted me home after taking a statement from me. I was never called to follow up or testify, so I can only assume the person didn't get caught. Meth hitchhiking. I was on a hitchhiking adventure from BC, Canada to Antigua, Guatemala, which started in September 2019. This post is taken from the notes in my journal, which I wrote as soon as I could after this insane experience. If you've ever hitchhiked before, you know how amazing it is and how many cool people you can meet. Out of thousands of rides across 40 countries, I've only had two bad and/or dangerous encounters thumbing it. This was my second one. I was taking a break from traveling to find weed trim work in California's Nevada City, a beautiful little town with a very interesting crowd, but got stuck a few towns over for not getting a ride all day. I ended up sleeping a night at the Love gas station, which I had done plenty of times before. I've slept on worse places, at least Love's has a bathroom. In the morning, I was a little more desperate to accept a ride because no one was stopping, and it had already been a whole day. I just wanted to get out of there. A pickup truck is speeding past me and slams the brakes ahead, then slowly backs up. Inside is a man and a woman in their late 50s, and he says in a husky voice, "Where are you headed, boy?" "Nevada City. Any distance helps."
"Well, get in. We're going to Yuba."
They seemed normal enough, even without most of their teeth and hair, so I jumped in. It all happened in rapid succession. I toss my bag in the back and jump in. I shut the door. I notice a pile of guns and bullets on the floor. Before I have time to rethink my decision, we speed off. So as I'm trying to assess whether or not I'm in danger, they start telling me how this guy just got out of jail for aggravated assault. How he beat that motherfucker so bad, he can't think straight no more. And they both laugh. She's holding his seatbelt over his chest. They both smell like shit. And they start asking how much money I have. I think, yeah, I'm not safe here. After hitchhiking all this way, I don't look particularly wealthy. I'm filthy, I need a shower, I look no different than the stereotypical homeless guy. So I try to seem more poor than I am, and more tough than I am too. I'm broke as fuck, man. That's why I'm going to the city, I'm hoping to make some cash trimming. The man looks me in the eye.
"Well, you'll find it alright. You'll find it good. Don't be afraid to do no dirty work. If people try, and they'll try, to fuck you, you fuck them first. You get what I'm saying?"
"Put your eyes on the damn road, Jesus Christ!" The woman points forward and he swerves back to the right lane. He asks me if I smoke, and knowing that California has legalized weed, I put two and two together. He's offering me a joint, so I say, "Yeah, I smoke." With a wild look in his eyes, he exclaims,
Great! And we turn off the highway and start down a dirt road. I'm more than worried, and I look behind us. In the back of the truck is my bag, a chainsaw, pickaxe, and a plastic tarp over something. Didn't help my anxiety. Finally, we stop in front of a clearing. The woman takes out not a joint, but a meth pipe. It's the first time I've seen a meth pipe, and a lot of things start to make sense. While he lights up and exhales into the car, I've never seen smoke so white. I roll the window down as fast as possible because I don't want to smoke that shit. The woman takes them as well, and they tell me how they were going to collect money that a woman owes them. That damn bitch is gonna pay today one way or another. Damn straight. She better have the money. I'm gonna grab her and say, "Where's my money, bitch?" Oh, she'll have it all right. She'll have it or else. Say, son, you ever steal something? 'Cause we could make $20,000 today. I don't exactly know how to answer this guy. And he repeats $20,000 today. Here, smoke some of this. And hands me the pipe. Nothing like meth, ain't that right? I gently reject it and say that meth's not really my thing. Which he surprisingly takes well and smokes some more before putting it away and driving off back towards the highway. His driving is terrible. Swerving, speeding, hitting brakes abruptly. And starts trying to convince me to help them steal marijuana plants. "You'll hold my gun, and I'll drill the hole, and I'll keep a lookout." "Yeah, baby girl, we'll keep a lookout. Now, you gotta be careful if you hear the dogs, because them sons of bitches are nasty. Nasty. See this bite?" And he reveals what looks like a terrible scar on his arm. I didn't really know how to get out of the situation, so I sounded as confident as possible, and said that I was meeting a friend to look for work together and they would be expecting me today. We neared the end of the Yuba City where they pull over to the side. "Well, it's your funeral. You don't want to eat? Fine by me, but if you ever want that cash, you call me." Hands me his number. "Hell no," I think. "Thanks, I will." Quickly retrieving my bag, smiling nervously. The woman says with a wave, "Take care now. God bless." And they speed off. I'm standing on the side of the road thinking, what the hell was that? Happy to be out of that car. Meth heads 1 and 2, thanks for the offer to steal marijuana plants, but let's never ever meet again. Chased through Satansville by a possible cult member. In Pennsylvania, right near the border into Delaware, there is a narrow, eerie place with deformed trees, closed-off paths, and lots of legends. It is formerly known as Devil's Road. The main attraction in a place called Satansville, which encompasses the whole of dark twists, isolated roads, and unsettling encounters. It was written about in the book Weird Pennsylvania, which highlights the creepy places of the state. According to many rumors, there is a cult house hidden in the woods surrounding the road, and any trespassers on the road, especially those who stop, will be chased out with a black or white SUV or truck. For years, I had read about the place and heard spine-chilling stories, until I couldn't stop thinking about seeing it for myself. My friend Matt and I almost spent every Friday night at the mall together, as teenagers do. As expected, it can get pretty boring pretty fast, especially with no money to actually have a motive to shop around for anything other than disappointment. Visiting Satansville without telling our parents became another weekly tradition of sorts. After he told me about his experience a month before our first visit, he told me that when he visited with his guy friends, his phone service completely cut out, leaving them without Google Maps in a potentially dangerous, unclear area that was already scarcely mapped. Soon after, he told me, a black truck came off a dirt road and followed closely behind them until they found the main road. It wasn't much, but it was enough for me to be hooked. Not too much happened on our first few trips. We would see other cars rarely, as it's a hidden road that is no longer marked
due to the excessive theft of a street sign. Occasionally, the cars would be black in color and we would get a rush of adrenaline. It was fun, but not exactly terrifying. Until one night. We finished up at the mall around 6, and we had left with enough time to circle around once or twice with daylight, and the remainder of the time in the dark. It was about a 40-minute drive to Satansville from the mall, and I was tingling with excitement. According to the legends, cars that visit frequently are more likely to have experiences at this place, and this would be our third time visiting in the last few weeks. Instead of Matt and I going alone this time, we bought our friend, Lola, who was very outgoing and would likely have a sense of humor in a situation we'd be too scared to continue in normally. We drove down the highway, and finally made the first turn leading to the seclusion. Matt and I had pinpointed several areas where we thought the cult house may be, but stopping on the road is illegal, so we'd never had a real chance to explore. At least, that's the logical reason I gave in lieu of us being major cowards. The ambience immediately changed as we entered Satansville, and the cool night air fled in through the cracked windows. In the first few turns, other people aren't entirely a rare sight. A few trucks pulling out of driveways, the like. However, the turn into Devil's Road never loses its wow factor. The trees on both sides of the narrow road lean away from the forest aggressively. Not just a tilt, but completely bending in the trunk away from things we could only imagine. We were approaching the first major road bend in the road, and a car was coming up towards us. It was a tight squeeze, nearly impossible, for two opposing vehicles to pass. The presence of a car alone was enough to cause a twinge in my gut. Matt was focused on squeezing by while turning, and Lola was too busy cracking jokes to see what I saw. But I have never forgotten the face since then. I looked over to the white Jeep to my left, and the window was incredibly tinted but half down. Looking back at me, straight into my eyes, like he had been looking at me long before I looked to him, was a young man. Maybe about 25, with long blonde hair, a deathly pale face, and horribly thin fingers on the steering wheel. He was not at all focused on driving. As his eyes pierced me, and this is the worst part, his neck was turned completely towards me, while the rest of his body was completely straightforward. This may not sound creepy, but this was not the normal way to bend your neck. He said something, but I couldn't hear him over Lola and Matt laughing at her antics. I couldn't break his gaze. I was stuck staring at him until finally, Matt passed the bend and he was gone. I kept checking the rearview windows, terrified with a feeling I never quite felt before. When I could no longer see the Jeep, though it felt as though it could still see me, I quietly asked my friends if they'd seen him. Neither of them had looked at him, nor felt anything unusual. I was pretty unsettled, yet excited to see what would happen. We turned off Devil's Road, but we're still in Satansville, preparing to loop back around when we passed a little shack that always housed two black trucks. There was no signs of any other drivers, and we wanted to stir the pot a little bit. We stopped for a few moments and honked the horn, flashed our blinkers, and kept driving. We also blasted Old Town Road for some reason, because that was our peak of comedy at the time. We looped back around and were back on the Devil's Road when Matt stopped mid-sentence to adjust his mirror. In the darkening distance was a black truck. We giggled with nervous excitement and kept driving. It was exciting, but it kept a reasonable distance, and I think we all kinda assumed it was a coincidence. That is, until we turned off Devil's Road once more and saw that there were no trucks parked by the shack anymore. We lost the truck when we turned on the main road to circle back again. We circled around two more times, nervous but skeptical, and not much happened other than an ass-riding white SUV that kept blinking its headlights. Not gonna lie, that freaked us out. And the return of one truck to the shack. This is where it gets really intense. On our fifth loop, we were all very tense. The aura had changed to heavy, and it was completely dark at this point. Things started to feel more ominous. probably from the slightly less passive actions taken towards us by whoever was there. We went down the bends, peering nervously into the woods. Some trees were marked with 666s and upside-down crosses, marks of other, more ballsy teenagers, and there was a distant light in the woods, courtesy of God knows what. As we turned off Devil's Road, but still in the heart of Satansville, headlights appeared behind us. It was impossible to tell what kind of car it was, as it was pitch black and we just started turning into the first major bend. Moments later, the truck appeared behind us, speeding. We were going about 25 and the truck must have floored it to catch up, and it drove uncomfortably close to us. I was the one to see it first. It was a black truck, windows tinted and driver unknown. We drove on for a minute, freaking out and turning completely behind us like creepy Jeep guy, but more normal. Soon a second truck joined behind it at a fork in the road, and they revved their engines as if in communication. The truck sped up, nearly crashing into us, and we were forced to speed up. This continued through many intense twists and turns, where our speed reached up to 70 at the maximum. They flashed their lights, kept speeding up and getting closer. At this point, we were losing our shit. They were definitely either going to run us off the road or catch us and do God knows what. They had these weird red lights on the top of their trucks, and the light was reflecting off every window in our tiny Honda. Just above a small hill, the main road was visible, and relief flooded us. We panicked again, though, when we realized we would have to wait for traffic to slow before we could turn, and they would definitely catch us. With nothing else to do, we stopped and glanced behind us. The trucks were gone. We all expected a sudden ambush, but made the turn onto the highway and started home, talking about what the fuck had just happened. We came to the conclusion that the trucks had probably turned onto a dirt road only visible to those who know it's there, and that they were chasing us away from their activities, like the rumors say. What were they doing exactly? We have no idea, and we had no intention of finding out, as we hadn't been back since. I still can't get the face and presence of the man in the Jeep out of my head, and this was over a year ago now. So, creepy Jeep guy and potential cult leaders, let's not meet. Ever. Trust your instincts. About 1 to 2 years ago, I was dating a musician in the area. Apparently, we had mutual friends and he gave lessons at a guitar center in the city where I took lessons. I had seen him there, but I didn't know we had connections at the time. It took me a while, but I realized we knew all the same people. He was about 10 years older than me. I will try to recount, summarize this as best as I can. Once, I went to see a friend's band play at a local bar. I walked in and he was by himself drinking at the bar. I remember walking in the place and him snapping his head around and looking at me. That moment truly captured his deepest state of mind. A restless, down on his luck, searching for the answer kind of energy. I don't know how else to describe it. But I could tell right away in that brief moment, this guy was off. I did not want to interact with him really. I was just there to relax and feel the music and hang out with the band after. But I had recently learned this guy knew the band and used to play with him, so I felt obligated to interact with him. We chatted and drank for a beer or two. By the end of the night, he suggests we hang out again and see more music sometime. I continue to hang out with this guy, always meeting up to go out to a bar after work. He seemed cool, confident, and he had recently moved to America in the last few years. So it was captivating to interact with someone who had cultural differences. After a few weeks of hanging out consistently, he revealed that he had gotten out of a relationship with a girl who he thought he would marry, but that she had BPD and drug issues. He later revealed that after they broke it off, she crazily accused him of domestic violence. Apparently, she asked him to come over to her apartment and talk. They argued. He claims he didn't touch her and left. She called the police and 2 weeks later filed a report, and they went to court over it. He told me they didn't have enough evidence to charge him, but he took a deal where he would go to an assigned anger management class and do some community service, and then they would exonerate him from any charges. Unfortunately, I took his word that she was crazy and he was innocent, and decided that I would be the judge of his behavior around me from the present moment on. We enjoyed the same hobbies, including music and riding motorcycles. We started to go to bike nights and got to know a lot of the same people in the motorcycle circuit around the city. Our mutual friends seemed to like me being social, but when it came to me dating this guy, they either had a negative opinion of it or didn't express opinion at all. "That guy doesn't have his shit together," they would say. Red flag number two. I decided no one really has their shit together, and they probably didn't know this guy that well anyway. We dated for a little over a year. I end up moving in with him about 8 months into it. I feel worse and worse about myself as time goes on. He's controlling. He takes every moment he can to make extremely rude / sarcastic remarks, always commenting on everything. I figure he's just insecure and will soon figure out soon enough that I'm no threat. He berates me for wanting any time on my own or for wanting to do anything that is meaningful to me. He expresses his admiration at my success in life, but also shoots me down for just about every little thing I do or say. We argue more. I try to retaliate and hold my own. I try to prove myself to him and explain myself constantly, but it feels like it's no use. Nothing is ever good enough. I try to express this in words to him so I can see where I'm misunderstood, so we can try to find resolution. But he just accuses me of being at fault. I know we are not compatible, but I can't quite figure out why. I just keep existing there. He continues to gaslight, belittle, and control me emotionally and sexually. I continue to convince myself that this is what relationships are like. I felt so awful about myself and my life. I go to therapy and quit my job. I end up getting offered a great new position at a new company, and I momentarily feel like things may turn out okay. At some point, I use his computer to print out a form I needed to send to the new company, and I see he left his files open. I saw file names that were related to his past court case. I get one of those weird feelings, and my instinct told me that this guy is a bullshitter and a liar, and I decided to look through the files for my own safety. I quickly find that he lied to me, blatantly and by omission, about the whole situation with his ex. She was living with him and left to go get her own apartment. He was the one reaching out to her. They sent letters back and forth, him insisting she was the only one for him, and he couldn't live without her. He would never stop loving her, etc. He went to her apartment late one night to try and work things out again, but she must have denied him, and he punched her in the face, threw her to the ground, and kicked her repeatedly. She had called the police immediately afterwards, not 2 weeks later like he said, and they documented the bruising and marks on her face and body consistent with what she reported. The police showed up at his house, and he refused to talk to them. I saw the copies of the police report and the court documents. I realized that he had done this after we had met during our first few weeks of hanging out and talking, not months ago, like he said when he initially brought this up. He had saved the letters. He still had pictures of her in her underwear on his computer. The whole thing made me feel so sick. Enough was enough. I was scared, and this dude could get very angry and belligerent, so I knew I had to be careful in how I handled this. I had an open conversation with him about my concerns with our relationship, but in a way that he felt in control. I asked him blatant questions about his ex situation and simply asked for the truth. He continued to feed me a timeline and details that were not consistent with the evidence I had found. I decided I had to get out quickly. I set up a new living situation, but it would take 2 weeks to get into. I planned to just ghost out of there one day with my small amount of stuff when he was gone, but he must have sensed my apprehension around him. One night he blatantly asked me if he and his life were too much for me to handle, and I just answered honestly and said yes, it's too much, but did not go into detail. So from that point on, the relationship was over. We discussed it being over. He said he would allow me to stay in the house for those 2 weeks until my house was ready. I owned a rental property at the time that I was moving back into. He insisted he still loved slash cared for me and wouldn't do anything to hurt me. It was the worst 2 weeks of my life. He slept in a separate bedroom. I tried to stay out of the house. He became more upset as time went on, and I became more uneasy. He began to stalk me and then reveal that he saw me at certain places with certain people later on and demand answers. I would often come back to the house only to find him sitting up later with a light on, ready to interrogate me. It was absolute hell. I was finally able to move out after 2 weeks of this. We parted ways and he insisted we could remain friendly and he wouldn't do anything to hurt me. That's when he started to fly off the handle. This guy knew my spots I liked to hang out in. He knew where my house was because he was the real estate agent who facilitated the transaction when I bought it. He knew all of my mutual friends and manipulated them in ways to find out where I was, how I felt about him, and who I was hanging out with. I begged them to disengage with him, but they didn't seem to think he was dangerous. Everywhere I went, he was there. He would approach me constantly, berating me, accusing me, demanding answers to ridiculous lines of questioning, and saying awful things to my friends, acquaintances, if I were with them. I tried to talk, reason, etc. with him, but it never helped. It would always end with him screaming at me from across parking lots, calling, texting me dozens of times, demanding to know where I was or where I was going, etc. And no one did anything about it. No one told this guy to fuck off or control himself, me included. I was starting to think I needed to get police involved, but I didn't know what I had to give them. My musician friends start texting me, telling me how they see this guy staggering around bars they're playing at, showing up with different girls and taking them home. Meanwhile, he is still talking and embarrassing me about our relationship. One Friday night, a month or two after we broke up, it's 3:30 a.m. and I am awoken from a deep sleep. My phone is ringing and it's him calling. I answer because I feel guilty about his earlier texts that indicate he might harm himself over all of this, just to make sure he's not hurt somewhere else. His voice sounds weird and hushed, and I can tell he's been drinking. The background of the call is very quiet. "Can I come over?" he asks. I ask where he is, and he tells me he is at a rest stop on the side of this major interstate. I knew this was not the case, because it is dead quiet on the other end of the line, and this highway is busy 24/7. I don't think that's such a great idea right now. It's late, I try to say calmly. I ask if he'd been drinking, and he insisted he wasn't drunk. I was getting creeped out, but I wanted to ensure he would leave me alone and not try anything further, especially at my place of residence. He starts crying these cringy, fake tears, telling me how hard his life has been and how much he needs me, but still pushing to come to my house. I try to tell him no, but he keeps pushing. I don't give in to his fake sob story, and then his tone immediately changed to sharp, nasty aggression. I don't react to it, and then he just deadpan says he had to go and hung up. Maybe 30 seconds go by, I'm thinking to myself, what was that all about? And then I hear it. I hear the very distinct sound of his motorcycle start up about a block from my house. He owns a 95 Harley with straight pipes, very specific sound that I was familiar with from riding with him in the past. My hair stood on end and I stopped breathing. The bike idled for maybe 30 more seconds, and then I heard him ride off, the sound slowly growing more faint as he rode away. I didn't sleep for the rest of the night. I was terrified I would hear the noise of the exhaust coming back, and I honestly did not know what I would do. I checked my phone and my other musician friend had texted me saying he was at their gig earlier that night getting very drunk. The gig was over an hour away from my house. He never came back that night, but I shudder to think what he would have done if I would have agreed to talk with him and let him come over. He harassed me a few more times, even telling my parents that he was going to marry me when they were down visiting for the week, and we were out at a public event that he also showed up at. I blocked his number, deleted my social media, and stopped going out. Turns out he started seeing some bartender in the city, and a few months later they got married. Then he stopped approaching me in public. But he will still hang out by my motorcycle at bike nights, if I go, and he will make sure I know he is there. I guarantee his new wife has no idea about what this guy has done, and what he was doing, all while the relationship was progressing. Just like I had no idea. To everyone reading this, trust your instincts, remain safe, avoid pain, enjoy life. Thanks for listening to Demon Creep Podcast. Don't forget to support the podcast by following it. The best things you can do is head over to my YouTube channel, Demon Creep, and drop me a subscription and a couple of views. Sharing my podcast or YouTube channel with your friends is a great help. Remember, growing is easier when you do it together. Until next time, this is Demon Creep, signing off.